Palestinian poet once said, "We travel like other people, but return to nowhere. We have a country of words. Speak. Speak so we may know the end of this travel."
You're watching Press TV live to Beirut now, where Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah is delivering a speech.
From the Arab and Islamic world and from many different countries in the whole world. Of course, the significance of this commemoration of Land Day and its importance is very high, very big importance. It is a protest, yes, it is a strike, it is a gathering for some hours, and some speeches are made, some slogans are chanted. However, it is also it's an expression of holding on to righteousness, holding on to the cause, holding on to sanctities, holding on to territories, to land. What do the occupants want, and those who are behind the occupants, the arrogant powers, what do they want? Those who are conspiring with them, what do they want? Those who are tricking us with them, what do they want from the Palestinian people, and what do they want from our Ummah? They want Palestine to be forgotten. It's become history of the past. That's what they want. Nobody is speaking about it anymore. Nobody's mentioning it. Nobody asking about it. That's what they want. They also want it to be outside the area of focus or the area of interest. They want it not to be a priority, and then they don't want it to be any of any concern whatsoever, and then they want it to be its people to be desperate, to become despair and lose hope of retrieving it, and just to give in and to accept the situation as is. What remains, what the Zionists leave for them, they allow for it. Although the Zionists today in the media, they said there is an intention from the Israeli government to confiscate thousands of square meters in the West Bank. This is more humiliation against the Arab world, the Arab League in general. This is what is required. What is required is for Palestine, first of all, to go away, not to be a priority, meaning every person is concerned with his own special issues. And second of all, they want Palestine not only to be a priority, but not to be a concern, and then to be forgotten. And despair. This, of course, the Israelis weren't successful in this because of the jihad and because of the struggle on all different fronts, on the political front, the media front, the cultural front, the technical, the artistic front, social front. This all has its effects in keeping this cause alive. However, the most important factor which had an impact on keeping this cause alive was resistance. The resistance on the battlefield, the blood of the martyrs, the blood and the wounds of the wounded, the suffering of the prisoners, some of them who are on hunger strikes for months, the suffering of those who are under a siege, the sacrifices of the bodies of the people, this blood which has been shed, this blood which shakes the conscience of this Ummah and awakens this Ummah, this is what kept this cause alive until now. And all the attempts of the arrogant powers and their agents and their tools in our Arab and Islamic world, all these attempts failed to end and to eliminate this cause, although hundreds of millions of dollars were spent to eliminate this cause. In all of the arenas, in all of the places of conspiracy against this cause and against its foreign presence and its presence in general. And today the Palestinians, they are expressing this holding on to the cause, on this insistence. And this is a very bright issue, because what is most important of all is that the Palestinians hold on to it, and then after them the Ummah. However, if the Palestinians themselves abandon their territory, abandon their sanctities, abandon their nation, abandon their cause, then everyone else, whoever this other person may be, then he'll be asked, are you more keen than the Palestinians? So one of the conditions for this cause to stay alive is the Palestinians holding on to this cause, the Palestinians to be there and present. And this is what these marches on Land Day express. Today, once again, the Palestinian cause is knocking on the doors of all the Arabs and the Muslims. And it's saying that it is the godly test. It is the cause of God. It is the historic responsibility. Responsibility on the shoulders of everyone, the governments, the regimes, the armies, the parties, political factions, intellectuals. And the Ummah, unfortunately, in many of the arenas, it isn't taking this responsibility. Although the Ummah is capable, we believe that the Ummah is capable of achieving victory very simply. It's not difficult, it's not complicated. This Arab Ummah, the Ummah of hundreds of billions of people and hundreds of millions of Muslims, this Ummah, and when it comes to its ability or capability to retrieve Al-Quds and Palestine, it has a great capability and it can make this achievement very simply, very easily. This doesn't need anyone to think too much. One of the days previously, Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, said, it's not a simplification if you calculate that. Maybe if some experts in physics come, they can also say this is precise. One of those previously, Imam Khomeini said, if every Muslim gets a bucket of water and we came 1 billion Muslims and threw these buckets of water on Israel, but let's put the Palestinians aside, of course, then Israel will be drowned. So it's symbolic. It's a symbolic expression. We don't need to buy weapons from America worth $60 billion, nor do we need all of this military spending, nor do we need nuclear weapons, nor do we need all of these great armies. Very simply, this Ummah can achieve a great victory. And the evidence to this, testimonial to this, is what do they say in philosophy? When you witness a problem, you can see what's happening. This Ummah, the Ummah of 1 billion Muslims, or 300, 400 million Arabs. One group of the Lebanese, one group of the Palestinians, who had some limited support, if you compare it to the capabilities of the Arab and Islamic Ummah, we limited capabilities, but because they're blessed and because some countries stood with them, like the Islamic Republic in Syria, and gave them some capabilities, they fought the Lebanese and the Palestinians. The people also put up with a lot, and they achieved two great victories in Lebanon and in Gaza, two historic victories. We're speaking about small groups in this Ummah, very, very small groups. If we want to look in the percentage, it will be 0.something%. So what are the capabilities of this Ummah? I'd like to say today, after the Arab summit, which was held in Baghdad for one day, I want to say ever since Palestine was occupied in 1948 until 1967, until today, every hour, every moment which passes, whereby Palestinian territory is occupied and the sanctities are being violated and our people are suffering and the prisoners are still in prison, as every moment passes, the governments will be held accountable, will be questioned in the Arab and Islamic world, and after them their armies and then their people, they'll be asked and questioned on the Day of Judgment. Some people might be surprised, what does it have to do with us? No, it concerns all of us. We're all responsible. This Ummah was capable of taking away, of lifting the oppression and stopping the violations, and it hasn't done so until now. It didn't do it before, it hasn't done so until now. Yes, they look to other areas, the non-priorities, the issues which are of not direct responsibility. Anyway, I don't want to speak about this. The road is clear. However, it needs a will and it needs determination. And anyway, we believe that the future of the people of this region is the future of this culture, of this thinking, of these values and these resistance. And between us and them, we only have time. And we are one of those people, the schools of thought, who believe that we will achieve victory, God willing. Another point which I'd like to speak about in the general situation, with respect to Syria, because we in Lebanon, from our perspective, this is a very important issue, and all of the region, it's important for the whole region. It's very clear that the situation in Syria is getting regional attention and international attention. Yesterday, in one day, there was the BRICS summit, which included very important, significant countries, big countries. They met, and we had the Arab summit as well in Baghdad. And we could have also called it the Iranian-Turkish summit. We could also call it an Iranian-Turkish summit, which was happening in Tehran. So three summits were happening for influential powers and countries in the world and in the region. The Syrian issue was present strongly in all of these summits. This is something natural, because in the end, the issue of Syria is not an issue which is separated from other issues. And what's going on in Syria, or where the situation takes us, will have an impact, will have big impact and big repercussions on the situation in the region in a very decisive and big way. At this time, we don't want to repeat what we said before in the previous occasions. However, at this time, I would like to say the following, because this is very important when it comes to the results. There is something which is clear. Some things have been decided, have become crystal clear, and some issues haven't been discussed, haven't been raised anymore. For example, number one, the foreign military intervention. Over the past few months, this was a real danger. And we all knew that foreign military intervention in Syria would lead to very dangerous repercussions on the whole region. Thank God, at this time, we can say that it is clear in the international atmosphere, regional atmosphere, we can say that this has ended decisively, or it has backed down a lot. The Americans might speak about this, and actually the Americans are the side which is most incapable of intervening militarily in Syria or anywhere else. The Americans, they left Iraq defeated, and they are looking for an exit in Afghanistan, and they are in a very bad situation. So this point is a very important point. The region, which just a few months ago was right on the edge or on the cliff, including Lebanon, was facing the danger of foreign military intervention, which might lead to dangerous repercussions on the security and stability in the region. This chance has now gone. There is no longer such a scenario. This is no longer a feasible scenario. Also, sending Arab troops to Syria, this issue has ended as well. This proposal has ended. Number three, arming the opposition in Syria. Of course, there are dangers on the Syrian situation in the case of arming the opposition. Also, it's clear on the international level, this has ended as well. And on the Arab level, even yesterday in the Arab summit, it's clear that they didn't adopt the option of arming the opposition. Maybe there are two or three countries who have adopted this option, but that's their business. However, the general atmosphere in the region and in the world has gone far away from the choice of arming the opposition. Now, with respect to toppling the regime by military force or by the military option, this has also ended. That's clear. If you look at the international situation and the regional situation, you see the international stance is not like the Russian and Chinese stance or the Iranian stance. When they back down, when the international stance backs down, this affects the situation on the battlefield, the results on the battlefield. When it comes to the facts on the battlefield, it's clear there's no possibility. The armed opposition is incapable of overthrowing the government. Yes, it can occupy a village, it can occupy a town, then the Syrian army would retrieve it. It can kill a sergeant or a lieutenant or someone here or there, as it does today on a daily basis. It can send bomb cars, of course, car bombs. It can send a suicide bomber, but this doesn't overthrow a government. So the military efforts to overthrow the regime or government, it's clear this won't lead anywhere. And so relying on military action to overthrow the regime is a lost bet, and it has a big burden, a bad burden, more bloodshed, more victims, more human loss, more material loss, without achieving anything. Now, the world and the region reached the stage whereby what is required in Syria is a political solution, and that's what we called for from day one. From day one, we said that the interest of Syria and the interest of the Syrian people, the dignity of the Syrian people, the blood of the Syrian people, the future of the Syrian people, Syria's strategic and national position, is for there to be a political solution in Syria. Of course, some people spoke about the political solution at the beginning, but they set conditions which are equal to overthrowing the regime. For example, the stepping down of President Assad. I think that the international and regional atmosphere today has overcome this stage. And so some sides of the Syrian opposition, whom we heard today, we heard some of them say that their condition to enter into dialogue was for Assad to step down. That means they're going backwards, these opposition groups. Today, the international situation and the regional situation and the Arab summit in Baghdad has overcome this, has put this aside. At the time where Kofi Annan came to Damascus as an envoy from the United Nations and assigned from the Security Council and a representative from the Arab League, and maybe it's the first time in history, I think, where a non-Arab becomes a representative for the Arab League. Of course, we don't have this racism, but I just want to draw your attention to it. At the time where Kofi Annan came and he didn't rely on the decisions and the resolutions and the proposals of the Arab League, this means that this issue has ended. And the situation in Syria is now into a new stage. The talk today is focused on a dialogue, the necessity of dialogue between the regime and the opposition, the leadership of Assad and the opposition. This is what we said before. If we did this from the beginning, we would have saved all this bloodshed, all these confrontations, all of these losses. And I said on more than one occasion that the Syrian leadership was present and ready to participate in dialogue, even with some opposition groups which nobody would have imagined the Syrian leadership to negotiate with. However, this choice was open from the beginning. Anyway, today what is being proposed is a political solution. The political solution is based on two foundations or two rules. The first is a dialogue between the leadership, the government, name it what you want, and the opposition. And the second is to implement reforms or to reach an agreement on real reforms and to implement these reforms. This is what solves the situation in Syria. If we really, as Arabs and as countries of the region, if we really, from Iran to Turkey to Saudi Arabia to the Arab countries in the Gulf to Northern Africa to the Arab countries to the Islamic countries, if we all really want peace in the region and stability in the region, if really there are some people whose hearts are beating for the sake of the Syrian people and their men, women, children and elderly, then the responsibility is clear. The solution is one, the political solution, by dialogue and reforms, period. There is no other solution. Whoever is loyal in any position whatsoever must provide assistance, in his international position, in his Arab position, in his regional position, in his media position, in his political position, in his social position, by money, charity, by his relations. Anyone who can provide any kind of assistance in order for Syria to go go towards a political solution and to retrieve security and stability and reforms. This is the historic responsibility. Religiously, when it comes to faith, when it comes to Islam and the Sharia, when it comes to nationalism, ethics, that's the way, that's the approach. Any other approach does not serve the interests of Syria or its people or Palestine or the sanctities or the Ummah or anyone. It's the interest of Israel if there's any other approach. Any other approach serves the interest of those who want to tear up the region and the era of American and Western weakness. This is a responsibility which we have. And this requires from us, when I speak about assistance, it means stopping the media incitement, regardless of who is lying and who is not lying, stopping the media incitement and stopping all kinds of in the internal clashes between the Syrians, striving to achieve more cohesion, also everyone being convinced to enter into dialogue, serious efforts. This is what saves Syria and saves the region with Syria. And I also have another point to refer to about Bahrain, and then I'll speak about Lebanon. I still have a few minutes. When it comes to Bahrain, it is very natural for Syria to have all of this international and regional attention in the Arab League or in the Arab Summit. This is something normal. However, what is not normal and what is really surprising and strange is that the issue of Bahrain is not even one point on the agenda of the Arab summit. First of all, because Bahrain is an Arab country. Second of all, because the people of Bahrain are an Arab people. And third, what is going on in Bahrain is a real catastrophe, real suffering. There are hundreds of thousands who are protesting. We have a people whose majority are angry and are calling for reforms, are calling for a solution. And they have certain political ceilings which differ. I don't want to go into their political ceilings. But the people of Bahrain still insist on the peaceful option, but they are being killed every day. They are being killed every day. So what's the difference between someone who's killed by bullets or someone who's killed by gas, poisonous gas? This gas which is being used today by the Bahraini forces or by the Saudi forces or any other forces, I don't know from where other forces have come. This gas is not used usually in the civil countries to disperse protesters. No, this gas is a killing gas, a gas which kills, just in order for them to say that they're not firing with bullets, although they are sometimes. Every day we have people killed, almost every day, by poisonous gas. And this gas is not thrown on the protesters, it's thrown also on the houses. And in the houses we have elderly, we have women, we have children. And in the outside, it does have a dangerous effect, but there's a possibility to run away outside, outdoors. However, these women or these children inside houses which are closed, when you throw poisonous gas, this is killing on purpose, deliberately. There's a catastrophe of this kind in Bahrain, but it's not even one point on the Arab summit, on the agenda of the Arab summit. Why? Because if it is raised, if it's discussed, regardless of the results might be to condemn the Bahraini people, maybe. It might be in support of the government of Al-Khalifa. But it's not even up for discussion. They don't even want to recognize that there's a problem. It's forbidden to recognize or confess there's a problem. Or else, some Arab countries threaten that they will boycott the summit. So can we expect reforms from them, from these people who don't even accept for this point to be discussed as part of a working agenda? Although, as we said, in Bahrain, nobody has taken up arms, nobody is opening fire, nobody wants to tear the country apart, nobody wants to destroy the country, nobody wants to sell the country, nobody wants to lend the country. But regardless of this, we still see this injustice. Anyway, this neglect, I know and you know that that this neglect only increases. It increases the oppression, but it won't touch, it won't harm the determination and the morale of the people in Bahrain who are living this situation for 1 year, ever since the beginning of their movement and their awakening and their revolution. And the Bahraini people have proven that they are a peaceful people and that they are capable of continuing, and they have a long breath. They can continue, and they are loyal to the cause, and they are courageous, and God, of course, will open for them the horizon, and God will bring victory to them, because the Bahraini people are proving day by day their commitment to the limits, commitment to the rules which they set for themselves according to their understandings, and because the Bahraini people are determined to continue, because they take this responsibility of this level of sacrifices and this oppression. Now, when it comes to Lebanon, with respect to the Lebanese situation, the first point I'd like to highlight is that some of those in Lebanon who are waiting for the results of the events in Syria, I think that they must reevaluate now. It's become clear. What I said about Syria makes it clear. It's clear where we're headed in Syria, where the situation in Syria is headed. It has become clear. Now, there are details, there are problems, the security situation needs time to be addressed, people to discuss, to hold dialogue for a political solution. It needs time. I'm not saying that Syria is back to what it was 1 year ago, but where the situation is headed is clear. Now, so there's no need in Lebanon for people to waste time and to continue to rely and put their money on lost bets. We in Lebanon, we said that we don't want to sabotage our country. And this is something which everybody must remember. All of those who were keen and intent on not sabotaging the country, we said that we disagree when it comes to Syria. We and some other factions, we disagree, but that's no problem. Let everyone express his own stance, his own opinion, but some, in expressing their opinion, they went too far, in my view. Some can express their political view in a different way. However, in some cases, they went too far. Personal insults. Now, as part of the limits to preserve the security in Lebanon and the stability in Lebanon and the confrontation not coming to Lebanon, because in the end, Syria has its allies in Lebanon and it has its enemies as well. Syria and Lebanon has its allies and its friends, and it has its enemies. We can disagree on Syria, and we can beat each other in Lebanon and sabotage our country, and we can disagree on Syria, but at the same time, each side can support his own stance, but at the same time, preserve Lebanon as much as possible. Of course, the theory of sabotaging Lebanon serves Syria. No, this is not a theory which Syria adopts, nor is it a theory which Syria's allies in Lebanon adopt. Now, we reach this point. I say once again that these bets, this reliance on what will happen in Syria, needs re-evaluation, and this re-evaluation will affect the political vision, the political stances, the political decisions when it comes to the internal issues and the internal situation in Lebanon. I just want to point out to this. The second issue regarding the local situation in Lebanon is the issue of the government. Let me clarify, because we in Hezbollah, we didn't speak, we are not speaking to the media, and so from one speech to another, together with my colleagues, we try to explain our stance. In our point of view, yes, the continuation of this present government serves the interests of the country, serves the security of the country, serves the position of the country at this stage, and we're always calling on this government to be serious, to be productive, to make achievements, to work, not because they say it's a Hezbollah government. No, this has ended. Everybody knows it's not Hezbollah's government. However, in the end, it's a responsible government. It should address the issues like the issue of electricity, rotten food, oil, gas, the petrol, the hospitals, the health sector, unemployment, etc., etc. And the demands of the labor unions, the demands of teachers. In the end, we have a government which is responsible to address these issues, these matters. What we're calling on for the government, we're calling on this government to be serious. But let me be frank, we are, to some extent, our performance is different, meaning that we are very intent, as much as possible, not to criticize this government. This doesn't mean we don't have reservations, we don't have a different evaluation, no. But as long as we are part of this government, as long as we find that the interest of this government, the national interest, needs the continued presence of this government. Some people might see otherwise. And as long as we're calling on this government to be serious and to pursue efforts, the appropriate track which we walk on, which we believe in, is serious efforts, advice, continued contacts, uncovering the problems and overcoming these problems. I'm speaking about us. How can we reach agreement? How can we draw the opinions more closer to one another? How can we solve the problems without tension, without going into confrontation with anyone, without this leading to a toppling of the government? Not for the sake of someone, but for the sake of a country, according to our point of view, because it's in the interest of the country for this government to remain until due course, until a specific period. So for this reason, we adopt converging the points of opinion, discussing the issues, solving the issues in the appropriate way. What is most important of all, that we reach a result. We want electricity. We want people to be able to turn their lights on. We have different points of view. We can sit down and discuss and hold dialogue. We, the Lebanese, and there's something which I want to say to some people. If the government has one opinion, if it was one block, they say it's the government of one block, the government of one party, the government of weapons, the government which is going forward by force. Now, if weapons brings electricity, that's good. People shouldn't be upset. Some people yesterday said that this agreement took place under the strength under the military arms. This government was formed under the force of military arms. No, people discussed and they overcame the problems and they reached the result. However, in the end, if weapons bring electricity, I welcome weapons. What's the problem with that? Weapons build a country. They don't even disrupt the process. They bring electricity. They don't put off the electricity. But however, this is not true anyway. Government is one block. They say it's one party, it's the government of one party, which is controlled by someone, a person X, led by person Y. If this government has, on the other hand, different points of view, and if it discusses and sometimes has disagreements, and if this government is more transparent, and what we see in the parliament, maybe this is positive in some areas. Transparency and democracy and freedom of expression, this rhetoric which we've gotten used to in modern times. So if this government, which you call it the Hezbollah government, if it allows for such diversity and such different opinions, such a level of freedom of expression and such a debate, okay, that's very good, that's excellent. That's excellent. That's something which is progressive. A progressive democratic government in any country. Anyway, what we say is the following. We say, yes, this government is responsible. The ministers in the government, the parliamentarians, they must work. They must address the situation. However, to rely on the failure of the government, I'd like to tell you something. In Lebanon, my dear brothers, the governments, whether they be productive or whether they be failed governments, the governments are overthrown by politics and they also remain by politics. The governments in Lebanon. The experience has taught us, this is my point of view, others might have a different point of view, but what we've gotten used to is that if this government is productive and excellent and great, the political alliances and the political structure and the political factions, if they change, then this government falls, even if it's an excellent government. If it's successful or if it's a failure, what keeps the government is politics and what topples the government is politics. And don't believe anyone who says that some protests overthrew a government. No, this is on the outside, the decorations. Politics in Lebanon is what overthrows the government. And read history. The same thing is happening now. So relying on the failure of the government doesn't overthrow the government. Politics is what keeps the government or topples the government. We're not saying that the government must be productive to stay or to remain. We're saying the government must be productive because it's responsibility to be productive, whether it wants to remain or not. As long as it's a government, as long as it has the confidence of the parliament, as long as it takes national responsibility, it must make achievements and work day and night, even if tomorrow there will be a vote of confidence in the parliament and it will be toppled. This is the humanitarian, cultural, religious rhetoric. So we are intent for this government to make achievements. Now, everybody is called on because when there's success, unfortunately, in Lebanon, people try and abuse or try and make fun of others. Enmity, political enmity, is disrupting a lot of projects and a lot of positive achievements. Personal enmity, the enmity between political parties, the enmity between different factions, the general enmity is disrupting a lot. But there are many clear points. It only needs people to meet and to take decisions. What I'm calling on, I call in the time which remains, and according to my political evaluation, which says that the government will continue, will remain, not like some say. Some say that the Hezbollah has taken the decision for the government to remain. This means it will remain. No, even if we take this decision, it doesn't mean it will remain. The political factor which has allowed for this government to remain is that it will continue. The political factor which has kept it until now will make it continue for a long time. And as I said previously, in the Lebanese situation, the situation in Syria, its success will have its repercussions on the situation in Lebanon. What I'm calling for all the components of the government and the political authority, the Prime Minister, the President, the ministers and those who stand behind the ministers, we're all called upon, my dear brothers. We want a serious approach. We want efforts, and we have a responsibility to take. We have a responsibility we have to take towards the people. We want to reach an understanding. We want to talk to one another. We want to reach results. This will protect the country. This is in the interest of the country. Maybe in Lebanon, because of the sectarian structure and the political party structure, some people won't hold others accountable. People won't hold others accountable. But I, as a student of religious studies, I say we have a day of judgment. We have a religious duty. We will stand in the hands of God. Today, the security of the people, the dignity of the people, the drinking of people, the food of the people, the health of the people, the lives of the people is a responsibility of this government. And we'll be asked about this responsibility on the Day of Judgment. And so from here, I go back to the mosque, to the compound of Sayyida Zainab with all of your blessings. And now the colleagues, the brothers and sisters will inaugurate this compound. And you can go around and take a look at this compound in the few moments or minutes remaining before the call for prayers, the Adhan. Of course, we deliberately, our mosques, most of the times, we prefer not to make big decorations, but because this compound is in this area, because it has a political and moral message, I'm one of those people who allowed for these decorations, these beautiful decorations, to say that we rebuild our mosques and rebuild our compounds better than they were before. This was a message which we wanted to send. And God willing, tonight, in just a few minutes, the first prayers will be held in this blessed mosque. Under the leadership, or Imam Ali Damush will lead these prayers. May God make this place a blessed place, make it a place for worship, for education, for culture, for unity, for solidarity, for faith, for more religion, more belief in religion, more communication between the people. And I thank you very much once again for being present. May God bless you, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah delivering a speech there via video conference. We were watching live pictures from Beirut on the case of Palestine. Of course, today is Land Day. We've been seeing the global march on Jerusalem al-Quds. He said that Land Day is about holding on to sanctities. Mr. Nasrallah said that the enemies of Palestine want the Palestinian issue to be forgotten and to become history. However, the Palestinian resistance, he said, has stopped that from happening and has kept the cause, the Palestinian cause, alive. They want its people to give in and lose all hope in retrieving their land. This is a cause of humiliation, he said, for the Arab world and the Arab League specifically. The Islamic Ummah, he said, can achieve victory on the Palestinian issue very easily if every and each Muslim takes part in the cause, he said. We don't need weapons to do that. We don't need nuclear arms to do that, he said. We just need the 1 billion strong Muslim Ummah to take part in supporting the Palestinian cause. He also said that the governments and the people of Arab and Islamic states are responsible for the sufferings of the Palestinian people. He also touched on the issue of Syria, saying that any foreign military intervention is going to be dangerous for the region. He said, however, it has become clear now that that is no longer an option. Arming the opposition and overthrowing the government in Syria through military means, he said, are also out of the picture now. The Syrian crisis needs a political solution. He said that the international players have come to terms with the fact that finding a political solution is not about forcing President Assad to quit as a precondition. He said the political solution is based on dialogue between the government and the opposition and the implementation of reforms. He also referred briefly to the case of Bahrain. He said that it was surprising and strange that the issue of Bahrain was not raised at the Arab League summit in Iraq on Thursday. He said that the reason why it wasn't discussed could be because they don't want to give it any significance, or maybe, he said, there's been threats by some Arab states that they would boycott the Arab League meeting if that issue was raised. So how, he asked, could we expect these countries to resolve the problems of the Arab world when they are closing their eyes to the deadly attacks that are raised, he said, on the Bahraini people, referring to poisonous tear gas that's been used on Bahraini people, even thrown into homes, leading to the death of women and children. The latest highlights of what was mentioned there by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in his speech in Beirut. You are watching Press TV's World News. Let's bring you up to date now with all the other international headlines today. First off, Israeli forces have killed at least one Palestinian and wounded 37 others in the besieged Gaza Strip. Israeli troops fired rubber bullets, tear gas and stun grenades to disperse Land Day demonstrators who responded with stones. Similar protests have also been held in the Lebanese and Syrian capitals. The demonstrations are part of an international campaign called the Global March to Jerusalem al-Quds. Palestinian activists say solidarity protests have been planned in some 80 nations. Meanwhile, Israel has tightened security in the border region of the Golan Heights in Syria. This is Israeli forces have attacked Palestinian protesters marking the anniversary of Land Day in the occupied territories. At least two Palestinians were injured and several others arrested as Israeli forces beat up the crowd of peaceful demonstrators in Jerusalem al-Quds. Israeli police also fired rubber bullets, tear gas and stun grenades at the protesters. Similar violence has also been reported in the West Bank city of Qalandia. Land Day marks the day when the Israeli military launched a fatal attack on Palestinians protesting Tel Aviv's land policies back in 1976. A correspondent in Lebanon earlier talked to an activist from Holland about her experience as a participant in the global march on Jerusalem al-Quds.
The Muslims and the Christians and even the Jews say that Jerusalem is a land for the mostly major Abrahamic religions, for all the religions, of course. But when you went there, did you see that people were able to live equally, or has there been displacement?
Not at all. It's an apartheid system. It's colonialism. It's Judaism, and I'm not even allowed to go to Israel, to the West Bank anymore, because Israel sends me back straight away. So the only place I can come now, it's horrible, and Europe should absolutely now fight for the Palestinians because they are suffering so much and so long that it's a shame that we have so many right-wing countries like mine. And they are all pro-Israel, and it has to stop. They have stolen the land of the Palestinians. And like she said before, it's true that we wanted to march. And we want to show to the Palestinian people that we are with them. No, they could not come out of the refugee camps. We wanted to go there. We go there tomorrow then. Because we wanted to show them that we really are with them. And that we never will stop helping them, fighting for them in every way.